Translation.
While in the prime of life, the great Maharaj Bharata gave up everything because he was fond of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Uttama Shloka. He gave up his beautiful wife, nice children, great friends, and an enormous empire. Although these things are very difficult to give up, Maharaj Bharata was so exalted that he gave them up just as one gives up stool after evacuating. Such was the greatness of His Majesty. Purport. The name of God is Krishna, because He is so attractive that the pure devotee can give up everything within this material world on His behalf. Maharaj Bharata was an ideal king, instructor, and an emperor of the world. But he passed all the opulences of the material world. He possessed all the opulences of the material world. But Krishna is so attractive that he attracted Maharaj Bharata from all his material possessions. Yet somehow or other, the king became affectionate to a little deer, and falling from his position, had to accept the body of a deer in his next life. Due to the King Krishna's great mercy upon him, he could not forget his position, and he could understand how he had fallen. Therefore, in the next life, as Jarad Bharata, Maharaj Bharat was careful not to spoil his energy, and therefore he presented himself as deaf and dumb, a dumb person. In this way, he could concentrate on his devotional service. We have to learn from the great King Bharat how to become cautious in cultivating Krishna consciousness. A little inattention will retard our devotional service for a long time. A little inattention will retard our devotional service for the time being. Yet any service rendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is never lost. Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Bhagavad Gita 2:40. A little devotional service rendered sincerely is a permanent asset, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5:17. Tyaktva sadharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajan avakto ta patet tato yadi yatraksha bhadram avabud amasyakim ko varta apta bhajatam sa dharmata. Somehow or other, if one is attracted to Krishna, whatever he does in devotional service is a permanent asset. Even if one falls down due to immaturity or bad association, his devotional assets are never lost. There are many examples of this: Ajamil, Maharaj Bharat, and many others. This Krishna consciousness movement is giving everyone a chance to engage in devotional service for at least some time. A little service will give one an impetus to advance and thus make one's life successful. In this verse, the Lord is described as Uttama Shloka. Uttama means the best, and Shloka means reputation. Lord Krishna is full of in six opulences, one of which is reputation. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya shriya. Krishna's reputation is still expanding. We are spreading the glories of Krishna by pushing forward this Krishna consciousness movement. Krishna's reputation, 5,000 years after the battlefield of Kurukshetra, is still expanding throughout the world. Every important individual within this world must have heard of Krishna, especially at the present moment. Due to the Krishna consciousness movement, even people who do not like us and want to suppress the movement are also somehow or other chanting Hare Krishna. They say, the Hare Krishna people should be chastised. Such foolish people do not realize the true value of this movement, but the mere fact that they want to criticize
it gives them a chance to chant Hare Krishna. And this is a success.
Om Gyanta Virandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya
Chakshurun Melitam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Bukam Karoti Vachalam Pungum Langayate Girim Yad Kripatamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinataranam Shri Rupa Shri Sanatana Bhattaraguna Shri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Dasa Raguna Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Tavasmi Radhikanatha Karmana Manasagira Krishna Kante Tavai Vasmi Uva Mehi Bhagatir Mama Govinda Valave Radhe Partike Tamaham Sadam Twariya Iti Janatu Govindo Mam Dayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadishe Karunam Ritavahini Kripaya Nija Padavja Dasyam Mahyam Pradiyatam Tavai Vasmi Najivami Twayavina Iti Vigyaya Devitam Nayamam Charanandigam Pancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyayvacha Patithanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha
So, Prabhupada's purports are like a mine, a treasure trove, so many jewels to appreciate. I guess we'll begin with the verse there. Here in this verse, we're reading of the glory of Maharaj Bharat, particularly of his renunciation. But this renunciation was not the objective of Maharaj Bharat, it is a symptom. For the devotee, renunciation is not a goal. That is the goal for the yogi, that is a goal for the jnani. They want to be very renounced. But for the Vaishnava, renunciation is not a goal. The Vaishnava might even jest about the, might even laugh at the renunciation that is admired by materialists or other yogis and jnanis. When the Vaishnava sees, for example, the Naga Baba, okay, you have to respect Krishna's opulence of renunciation there. But from the Vaishnava's perspective, for what? You're walking around naked. So what? You're covered in ashes. You don't have a home. You must respect Krishna's quality of renunciation there. But to what end? Just like when we see a materialist with great wealth. So you must respect Krishna's opulence of wealth. But still we think that the that materialist with great opulence is misdirected. They're bewildered. Similarly, when we see a renunciant with their opulence of renunciation, the Vaishnava looks and says, we respect that renunciation, but still misdirected. For what purpose? So then why is the Bhagavatam,
glorifying Maharaj Bharata's renunciation.
It's interesting, actually. It glorifies both his opulence and his renunciation together.
He was very opulent. He was a great ruler, an emperor, with a beautiful wife, children, friends. So these are all glorious things. But then the Bhagavatam admires here in this verse that he was able to give it up. Not just to give it up, but to give it up without any sense of loss. Quite a vivid example. when one evacuates, one has no sense of loss. Oh, that was mine. Now I've given it up.
No, you walk away from it. Don't look back.
So Maharaj Bharat, that's the example that's been given to us. It's not that he goes, oh, okay, you know, if I really have to, it's my duty, should be done. Without any regret. When my Guru Maharaj, Hidananda Maharaj, took sannyas, Prabhupada told him that you mustn't have any regret. Sometimes you'll, as a traveling preacher, he told my Guru Maharaj, he said, sometimes you'll go and my Guru Maharaj and Sasarupa Maharaj took sannyas together. Prabhupada said, sometimes as a traveling preacher, you will visit people's homes. They'll be very opulent. And you shouldn't think, oh, I once had a home, I once had a wife, I once had... Now it is gone. Prabhupada said, there should be no lamentation, no regret. Then you are a sannyasi. But if you're forcing yourself, restraining and doing this thing that's not encouraged, actually. So Maharaj Bharat's renunciation is great. He's renouncing without any regret. But and Bhagavatam is appreciating that, is admiring that. Although for a Vaishnava, renunciation could be another distraction. Just as wealth can be a great distraction, just as beauty can be a great distraction, just as learning or knowledge can be a distraction, janmaishvarya shruta shribir edamana madapuman nevar hatyavi datumbai tvama kinchana gochara. Kunti Rani, she says to Krishna, my Lord, you are the property of those who are akinchana gochara, those who are materially exhausted, those who are materially impoverished. Because people who are very busy, who are very distracted, trying to increase their family position and prestige, their wealth, their beauty, their learning, their knowledge, they cannot approach you with a sincere heart. Sincere means authentic. Sincere means integrity. Bhakti must be with integrity, with sincerity. The word sincere comes from Latin, I believe. During the Renaissance, there was lots of construction using marble. Marble prices shot up through the window. Through the roof. Shot up. There was a rush on marble for this opulent palace construction, church construction. Not all marble is perfect, yeah? So there's different qualities of marble. Marble that has lines through it is not considered as valuable as marble that is spotless. So some lines that can also be appreciated in marble as a type of a design, but when those lines are also those lines are holes or cracks, then that's a real problem. Yeah. Some lines they can look nice. That can be an aspect, a feature of the marble. Although plain marble is more valuable, those lines they can also be as a feature, just like the marble on the altar has these beautiful lines in it. But when those lines become holes, that's a problem. So the value of that marble is much less. So in the European winter, they would fill up those holes with wax and sell it at top price. So you get this word, sincere. It means without wax. Bhakti must be without wax. It must be sincere. The other word we have is integrity. A building which has integrity, or a ship that has integrity. What does that mean? You get buildings that are a facade, and then you have a building, the design of that building has integrity. I can give you an example. In Mayapur, they're building the temple of the Vedic planetarium as per Srila Prabhupada's desire. Prabhupada's instruction that a wonderful temple be built there. So that temple has had so many designs. As a child, I remember the design that we had was a temple with 108 domes. Very beautiful, Bengali-style design. And that was, for many years, that was what we understood the new temple would look like. Later on, other designs have come. One that was developed by an Australian devotee named Parasevana. Also very remarkable. I was at one session, like a planning session for the temple construction committee, Mayapur. What is SMP? SMPD. Sri Mayapur Project Development, SMPDC. Sri Mayapur Project Development Committee. Anyway, so they were discussing the design and they were saying the older design didn't have integrity. What does that mean? It means that there are false ceilings. I'm not saying to criticize this design or appreciate another design, just to help you understand the idea of the word. A building that has false ceilings or facades where the structure, where the structure of the building is not entirely authentic. What you see on the outside is as a ceiling or the whole structure of the thing, doesn't have integrity. In the sense that you're using lots of scaffolding inside of it to prop things up and hold things in place, rather than the structure itself being appreciated for what it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah? I remember when the Pope used to visit Poland, the old Pope, Pope John Paul II. And so I think it was Gdańsk specifically, but the towns that he would visit, they would have a renovation. A facelift. And it literally was a facelift. Because buildings that were a little bit dilapidated, or maybe had been knocked down, they would get a facade. Right, Bara? You don't remember this? These things are of interest to me. They would get a facade. And so, you know, the Pope would visit this town and everything would be looking sparkly and shiny and... But it's only at street level, because you go behind and you see that, you know, that building is dilapidated and whatnot, or it doesn't even exist. Painting the walls. Yeah. I saw it with the Pope's visit. And so, how does that relate to us? Our bhakti needs to be with integrity. What you see on the outside, what you see on the inside, they need to speak to each other. They need to represent each other. It needs to be sincere without wax filling in cracks and giving an outer appearance of a thing that you sell it at a value that it does not in fact have. So Kunti Rani, she says that when people are approaching Krishna but they are distracted by these desires for wealth and fame and knowledge and whatnot, she says their bhakti is not sincere. It doesn't have integrity. It looks like bhakti on the outside. There's been a facelift. But on the inside, the desires are materialistic. So Kunti Rani, she's telling us these things can be distractions. Distractions from bhakti. Similarly, the desire for renunciation can also be a distraction. It's not mentioned by Kunti Rani in her verse, but it is another potential distraction from bhakti. Just as those material objectives can be a distraction, so can renunciation. The desire for renunciation, the aspiration for renunciation, is generally linked to the desire for liberation. The desire for liberation is a running away from material pain. So it's a negative motivation. I'm suffering from disease, old age, birth and death. Let me run away from it and be liberated. So whereas the materialist is going towards the jnani, the yogi, spiritualist, they are running away from. There are two types of material motivation. Going towards, going away from. Reward and punishment. That's behavioral psychology. Basic learning theory is that you reward good behavior, you punish bad behavior. As you positively reward good behavior, it becomes a habit. As you punish negative behavior, it will be broken and lost. Because human nature is to go towards pleasure and away from pain. Whatever, in the training of animals, in the training of children, in the training of adults, these principles are used. Reinforce positive behavior. Every time they do something right, say, well done, good job, excellent. Here's a bonus. Here's a chocolate. Here's a certificate. Here's a plaque. Here's a, somehow reinforce that positive behavior that you want to see more of. Positive reinforcement. And the behavior that you want to extinguish, be very consistent in in admonishing it. That's how a society, that's how the whole legal system of our society is set up, based on those principles. So the kami, going towards these opulences, and the yogi, so-called spiritualist, going away from them. Neither of them are admired by the devotee because we see them as opposite sides of the same thing. Yeah? They're opposites of the same thing, attraction and aversion. The two opposites of the same coin. And yet Bhagavatam is here glorifying the renunciation of Bharat Maharaj. Why?
So
Yeah, well, not necessarily that it brought him closer to Krishna, but that it is a symptom or a side benefit of his bhakti. That's what's glorious. So what's glorious is his bhakti. What is glorious is his devotion to Krishna. That's what we are to appreciate. This renunciation that he's exhibiting, that's a symptom. That is a side benefit of his intense devotion. So he's not aspiring for renunciation, he's aspiring for Krishna. His affection is for Krishna. And the indicator of that is that he has no material attachment. Rupa Goswami, he says, he advises, he warns us. If you have any desire for increasing society, friendship and love in your life, don't go to Vamsivat, the bank of the Yamuna River, in the moonlit night, in the Sharad season. Don't go there. I warn you, if you go, you will hear the flute playing of Madan Mohanji. You will hear the sound of Madan Mohan's flute. And you will lose all affection for the material world. You will not be able to pursue material objectives with an intense greed, with lust, with passion. So don't go there if that's what you were aspiring for. So that's what's glorious in Maharaj Bharat. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says that when the kripa of bhakti begins to grow, there are sprouts, there are leaves that when the flower of bhakti begins to grow in the heart, then there are leaves that grow as well. Side leaves, side shoots. And those leaves, they have a characteristic. The top side of the leaf is very smooth. The bottom side of the leaf is very... it's a bit rigid, a bit... Tough. We're getting closer. Rough. It's rough, yeah? The top side is smooth, the bottom side is rough. So what does that leaf represent? What we're appreciating is the flower of bhakti growing in the heart. But there are these leaves, they grow as well. You're cultivating the flower. Yeah. Yeah. The flower itself is bhakti. The leaf, the rough side of the leaf is a detachment from the material nature. And the smooth side of the leaf is the beginning of all auspiciousness. The rough side is a detachment and a liberation from pain, from suffering, from hankering, from lamenting. Because we get all of these hankering, lamenting, pain, suffering, anxiety. It's all because of our attachment. So as you are renounced from the material nature, you're liberated from pain, suffering, hankering, lamentation. And the smooth side is beginning of all auspiciousness. Kleshagni Shubhada. Kleshagni means freedom from klesha. Adi Admik, Adi Daivik, Adi Bhotik. Shubhada means beginning of all auspiciousness. Not just the beginning. All auspiciousness, the giving of all auspiciousness. The that can even relate to material auspiciousness, beauty, fame, strength, following. In giving up all of these things, Bharat Maharaj is exhibiting great renunciation. He's also exhibiting great opulence. That's a beautiful thing. We are honoring. Wow, he could give up those things that are impossible to give up. An empire. Wealth. He gave it up. How wonderful. So he becomes beautiful. He becomes more beautiful. More famous. More glorious. The Vaishnava is the embodied auspiciousness. That place where the Vaishnava walks, Yudhisthira Maharaj, becomes a holy place. The food that the Vaishnava tastes, that is Maha Bhagavat Prasad. We have Mahaprasad and Mahabhagavat Prasad. Narad, he tasted the prasad of the Mahabhagavat Prasad of the Bhakti Vedantas, and his heart was transformed. He himself wanted to become a Bhakti Vedanta. He left in search of Lord Narayan. As a child. The water that has washed the feet of the devotee can purify the heart, can purify the mind. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he was playing the role of a devotee, and during the Gundicha Marjana, the cleansing of the Gundicha temple, one Bengali Vaishnava, that's how he's described by Kaviraj Goswami. He went and started pouring water on Lord Chaitanya's feet and collecting it. Hey, you're supposed to be cleaning the temple. What are you doing? Pouring water on my feet. Mahaprabhu was cleaning. This Bengali Vaishnava, he went, you know, the step below, poured water, collected and started drinking it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, inwardly he was pleased, but externally he didn't even chastise him. He chastised Gadadhar Pandit, was it? One of the senior devotees. Hey, what is this Bengali Vaishnav doing? That's the principle. The feet, the water that has washed the feet of the Vaishnav, it can purify. So the Vaishnava is embodied auspiciousness. But the Vaishnava is not aspiring for that. The Vaishnava aspires only for bhakti. That flower of bhakti turns into the fruit of prema. And these leaves, these smooth and rough sided leaves, they are, that just happened to come along, yeah, just a side benefit to bhakti. So here in this verse, we are glorifying, Maharaj Bharata's renunciation is being appreciated. In other verses, we might be appreciating his wealth. Yudhisthira Maharaj's wealth, it is glorified in the Bhagavatam. Sudama Vipra. Yeah, his story is that Krishna gave him amazing opulences. After a period of great poverty, Krishna gave him amazing opulences, a palace that rivaled that of Indra's, made his wife so beautiful, he was almost unable to recognize her, at least by the way she was dressed. We glorify that. Krishna's gift of wealth. Someone else, it's renunciation. Someone else, it's wealth. It's glorious either way. not for the wealth or the renunciation, but for the bhakti. That is the source of these opulences. Yeah? The renunciation is not glorious, the wealth is not glorious from a absolute perspective of a Vaishnava. The bhakti is glorious, and the bhakti gives these side benefits. And then we appreciate, wow, that renunciation, it's a symptom. Oh, that wealth, oh, it's a symptom of Krishna's mercy. Of someone's intense affection for Krishna, of someone's intense relationship with Krishna. That is glorious. And that's what we aspire for. Marobi rakobi yoicha tohar. Slay me, protect me as you wish. Yoicha tohar. That is your choice. Nitya das prati tuhar. I am always your servant. I only want that qualification. Tua adhikar. I only want that adhikar that I am your nitya das. I am your servant. Svarga pavarga narake. Lord Shiva tells Uma, Parvati. Those devotees of Narayana, if they're in heaven, if they're in hell, they're glorious. They remember Narayana. They are happy. They are satisfied. That's what we should aspire for. And in that aspiration, in that engagement, if it is your duty or lot or responsibility to accept great opulence, do that. If you're a grihastha, you need some opulence for your family. If it is your duty or responsibility or service to be very renounced as a brahmachari or a sannyasi, in Kali Yuga, sannyasis have more opulence even than the grihasthas. But if that is your service, then do that. Accept your service, accept your lot, your responsibility. Keeping your prime objective, your prime focus in cultivating only bhakti. That is your real asset. Prabhupada's given different examples here. How wealth or renunciation, those are our transitory positions. But bhakti is an eternal asset. That's the important thing. And you may be famous for your renunciation, then you might lose that fame, you might slip and fall, and become infamous as a fallen renunciant. The most important thing is to keep that bhakti. And then it's all a test. Then it's all a process of purification. To deepen your bhakti even further. Prabhupada's given different examples of Ajamil. Given Bharat Maharaj himself as an example. So these changes of circumstance, they are tragic for the materialist. But for the Vaishnava, they are also opportunities for purification and coming closer to Krishna. If you understand that, you can go through anything with resolution, determination, confidence. You can face anything. Without disturbance. Of course, you're in the situation, there's some upset. But deep inside of you, you can accept it all. and persevere and continue on your path. And the advanced devotee will also be able to recognize the struggles and the trials and the tribulations of another Vaishnava as all part of a process of purification and deepening of their relationship with Krishna. So bhakti is the real asset, it is the real objective, it is the real goal, it is the real opulence. These other so-called opulences, they are not important to the Vaishnava. They should not be important to us. We might accept them as our duty and our role and our responsibility, but ultimately it's about bhakti, it's about devotion to Krishna. All right, so we'll conclude there. Any comments or questions? Ghanashyam Prabhu?
Like, in Vaishnavism, in our philosophy, we have this term, Yukta Vairagya.
Yeah.
And our mind really likes that term.
Yeah.
It comes across anything new. And it allows to possess something.
Yeah.
And more specific, just to give you an example, I have a set of Bhagavatam with me, and I read it regularly.
Yeah.
And I got an Amazon Kindle gifted to me.
Right.
Now, initially, my mind told me that, like, okay, we can. That means, like, one single thing, you have the whole Bhagavatam or the whole Bhagavatam over with you, you can take it away, you can carry it.
Yeah.
But I observed myself in the past 2 years, such a situation never arose at all, actually. So, I'm not sure where to draw the line. As a brahmachari, I mean, as you said, one of my responsibilities is to practice vairagya.
Yeah.
But then there is this risk of actually going to the extreme, actually, without putting an object into its proper use in Krishna consciousness.
Sure.
How do I draw
the line? Yeah. The question about Yukta Vairagya, that's Lord Chaitanya's principle, Yukta Vairagya, that engaging a thing in an opulence in Krishna's service is actually the higher renunciation. Whereas the materialist who takes to renunciation might despise and disdain all things as bad. The devotee can take those things, engage them in Krishna's service with a spirit of renunciation, and that is a higher level of renunciation. So Ghanashyam is asking how to actually apply that, because sometimes Yukta Vairagya can become an excuse. We have this motto, preaching is the essence, purity is the force, books are the basis. But then that can get turned upside down, where preaching becomes the excuse, purity becomes a farce, books become the basis. All in the name of Yukta Vairagya. And so, that requires actually maturity and sensitivity. Very difficult for a neophyte devotee to understand how to apply a thing in Krishna's service with that spirit of Yukta Vairagya. It's not for me, it's for Krishna. That takes maturity. And so, For a neophyte devotee, then we should be very mindful and careful, and take guidance. Yeah, I mean, at any stage of your devotional service, you need guidance. We all need guidance, but particularly at the neophyte stage, we can delude ourselves. Yeah, we can delude ourselves. So, at that stage, we need to take guidance. We need to be sincere. And a person of integrity, and that, you know, we might ask ourselves that, why do I need this really? It's a good question to be asking. Why do I need this? Do I need this really for my service, or am I telling myself a story? As each new opulence comes your way that you're going to engage so gallantly in Krishna's service, you can ask yourself that question. You can ask other devotees that question. Your mentors, your peers. Yeah.
Once I heard, I think it was Ayanda Prabhu in class, and he said that we often perceive Yukta Vairagya as using things
Hmm.
But he said that's not yukta vairagya.
Right.
It doesn't mean using things we attach to materially in service of Krishna. It means using things for Krishna in the spirit of renunciation.
Right. Yeah, that's a good distinction.
And also, I remember in Bhakti Loka Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains this good and bad things in Goshen. So, in the Padashamrita, he speaks about renunciation for Gurdastas and for Brahmacharis. So, he breaks down all principles as, you know, into categories of Brahmacharis and Gurdastas. And it's interesting how he says that eventually, renunciation is what your ashram allows you to accept as a religious life, and what your ashram doesn't allow you to accept renunciation. So he's like, we have this allowed to have contact with the sects of the Brahmacharis.
Sure. Yeah.
So then he's not, and he even speaks for the japa, that sometimes Grihasthas are allowed to do the japa in the work because, you know, they do more business.
We love Bhaktivinoda Thakura's writing. And as you're speaking, you're reminding me of Prabhupada's explanation of the first verse number one from Ishopanishad. Ishyavasya madagam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat tena chaktena bunjita magrada kasya svidanam. To accept everything according to your quota. Everyone in this world has been given a quota, and we should accept that quota and engage that in life, knowing well to whom it belongs. And Prabhupada's purport, he gives a very interesting analysis. What is the quota for? I think it's for the sannyasi, for the brahmachari, for the grihastha. Also, what is the quota for the human being? Generally, proper vegetarian food is our quota. And then for the animal, their quota. For the lion, the quota is to eat meat. And so, yeah, Prabhupada gives a very interesting analysis of, you know, each person's quota, and says that the Upanishad is telling us, you take your quota, not someone else's quota. And take that quota, knowing that it belongs to Krishna. Then you can live purposefully. Yes, last question or comment.
You mentioned that we should have respect for renunciates,
yeah,
even though they're, it's not direct to Krishna.
Yeah. Okay, so respect according to social convention. Just like you should respect your elders. So how do you respect them? Well, you respect them according to the social convention. They may not be Vaishnavas, they may not be devotees, but socially, they're your senior. Spiritually, you may be their superior. Socially, they're the superior. So within the social context, then you offer that respect according to the social etiquette. So respecting the wealth of a materialist, you're not respecting, you respect them as a spirit soul. But the wealth itself, that is Krishna. That's Krishna's opulence. So you can respect Krishna in that. So how do you do that? You don't go and offer your full dandabats and, you know, offer Guru Puja or whatever. But, yeah, according to the social etiquette, that in our society, wealthy people, they do command a certain respect. And it's a kind of a subtle thing, sometimes more or less or whatnot. Beauty is respected. There's a bias towards beauty. But we can see Krishna in that. Rather than ourselves becoming caught up and enamored or despise,
in our renunciation, we can see that's Krishna, there is a reflection of Krishna's beauty. Appreciate that. So the renunciation of a Mayavadi, we're not respecting their Mayavad, their philosophy in that way. We might respect that quality of renunciation, that is Krishna's opulence. If they're a Brahmana, we might respect that they're Brahmanas. If they're older than us, we might respect their seniority in age. But philosophically, we will not respect. Yeah, so that takes maturity, understanding how to balance that. I was with Basu Ghosh. We went to see one very, very famous and learned Vedic scholar in Vadodara. Vadodara is a center for Sanskrit learning. So we went in to see him, and Basu Ghosh offered full obeisances. So I did as well. And then we sat, you know, he was on the asana, we were sitting down in front of him and asking some questions. And then we left, and one of Ghanashyam's godbrothers said, "Hey, Basu Ghosh Prabhu, how can you offer obeisances to him? He's a Mayavadi." And Basu Ghosh said, "He's a Brahmin. Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna, Namo Brahmanyanevaya Go Brahmanihitaya Cha Jagatita." Krishna, he likes Brahmanas. I respected him as a Brahmana. He also is very learned. He knows the whole, you know, Veda in his head. So I respected him as someone who carries that Veda. His understanding may not be proper. But I respected him as someone who knows the Veda. So on that basis, I offered my obeisances. Not to him as a Mayavadi. Vidvan Goranga. Did you know already? Granthadar Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai samaveta bhaktavinda ki jai nitai gaur pranamani.